Nomenclature, naming conventions, and the decision to name a child are among the more vital conversations in the English language and Western cultural lexicon. And today we find out what's in a name with the guest that was supposed to join us in the first part of the hour, Dr. Cleveland Evans, psychology professor and onomastics researcher. We'll find out what onomastics means in just a few moments. He's at Bellevue University, the former president of the American Name Society. He also writes a column for the Omaha World Herald up in Nebraska. Welcome to the show, Dr. Cleveland.
Thank you for having me.
All right. What is onomastics, or onomatology, as it were?
Well, that's the scientific and academic study of names and naming. And it includes all sorts of names, including trade names and place names. But, you know, I focus on given names as my area of interest.
Dr. Evans, why are names so important in our society?
Oh, well, they're important in every society. I mean, names are one of the few things that is a cultural universal. There's no culture in the world that doesn't give names to people to designate them. And so it becomes a very important part of everybody's identity. You know, by the time kids are 2 years old, they identify strongly with their name, and it becomes an anchor for the rest of their thoughts about themselves.
Certainly. And when I was speaking of society, I did mean global society. We're always thinking global here, even though we're based in Kansas City on Central Standard. What do we hope to achieve, Dr. Evans, when we're naming our children?
Oh, well, obviously the different parents probably have different values with that. It used to be that people very often wanted to honor relatives and carry on things from the cultural past. These days, it seems like the biggest issue for many parents is trying to find a name which is unusual or unique, so that a lot of parents seem to think if their kid gets into kindergarten and there's another kid with the same first name in the class, they've committed child abuse somehow.
Right. Speaking of child abuse, the celebrity baby boom has caused some to look at names of babies almost as if they're names of albums or movies or art projects. Very artistic, very creative naming. I think, for instance, of Chris and Gwyneth Paltrow Martin, that family, and their baby Apple that came out. What has this sort of thing, the celebrity baby culture, done to our naming culture from what you've been studying?
Oh, well, I think that it's one of the influences that has made the public in general be more interested in giving their kids unusual names. There's as much going on with how, you know, characters get named in the movies and the TV as how the celebrities name their actual babies with that. But the biggest change in the last 40 years has been simply that the percentage of kids who get the most popular names is way down from what it used to be, so that kids' names on average are much less common than they were. You know, 30, 40 years ago, almost 5% of American boys being born were named Michael, and today it's 1% or even a little less getting the top name Jacob, you know.
And you mentioned, for instance, that Edward wasn't going out of style.
Edward was going out of style.
It was.
It just started up again the last couple years, probably because of Twilight, you know.
Because of Twilight.
Yeah.
Speaking of the celebrity culture, let's run through a few names that I'm sure a lot of our listeners may know and may be shocked to find out that it's not their real names. And then after that, I'll ask you a question about why celebrities change their name. Let's go through the list. Rihanna, not a real name. Tina Fey, not her given name. Bruce Willis, not his given name. Jamie Foxx's real name is Eric Bishop. Whoopi Goldberg, we all know, it's not real. John Wayne, also change his name for the sake of their career. Why does this happen, and what does it mean when an agent or a press agent or a publicity person or a manager or some type of celebrity-obsessed cultural figure says you got to go out and make a name for yourself, and that means changing your name from Ralph Lipschitz to Ralph Lauren?
Yeah, well, Obviously, a last name like Lipschitz has a lot of connotations in English
right.
that for somebody who wants to be a fashion designer
right.
might not be completely positive. And so that's a lot of what's going on, is that people want to choose names that fit they think fit the image better that they're trying to convey. And so you ironically have, I mean, one of the ones you mentioned, Whoopi Goldberg, you know, she chose her name when her main goal in life was to be a stand-up comedian, you know, and then when she went on to become a more serious actress, it may not seem quite as appropriate, but she was sort of stuck with it then. So,
and so people choose these names. What makes people choose particular sort of catchy names? In the naming convention, Jamie Foxx, for instance, is a very catchy name. Bruce Willis. Are these names symmetrical? You study the actual naming conventions. Why do people choose these sort of symmetrical, short, yet memorable names? Tina Fey, Rihanna, Bruce Willis, Jamie Foxx, Steve Carell, for instance, is not his real name.
Oh, well, you know, I think they choose things which are shorter and which sound to most people like, quote-unquote, American, more American names, which unfortunately really means it's British, sounds like they're English or Irish in the last name. It's like Winona Ryder was originally Winona Horowitz, you know, which is a very Jewish last name. And Ryder, you know, sounds more like a cool name that a character in one of her movies would have.
Right. Is there a sense of disingenuousness with that based on your research or based on what you've seen? Hiding the authentic self for purpose of celebrity. People ask me all the time, is my name a stage name? And it's not, but, you know, it's a little bit unique. And, you know, I bore the brunt of the ridicule and the funny usages of the name all my life. But, you know, I appreciate it now. But tell me about the sort of duplicity in that name, changing the name and therefore changing the identity.
Well, I guess it... I don't want to cast aspersions at any particular celebrity. I would think that if you're going into the business where you're going to be an actress or even a fashion designer like Ralph Lauren, that image is just part of the occupation. You know, if you're going to be a movie star, having an image is something that you manage and you hire people to help you with. And the name is part of that. And I'm not sure how many of them, you know, that their personalities be that they're trying to really hide something by changing it from themselves. But it certainly helps them themselves develop a different identity when you change your name. Obviously, if your name is a main part of your identity from when you're 2 years old, then if you change it when you're older, you are saying that you want to change your identity and the way you present yourself to the world in some way.
Certainly, and branding is sort of part of that as well, right?
Yes, and there's a lot of people, specifically even general people on the who talk about what they're going to name their kids on the internet, even not celebrities, who specifically make that connection. There's a lot of people who one of their main reasons now why they think, well, I have to give my kid a name, which is not very common and unusual, is because they want their kid down the road to have a website that you can easily find on Google.
And speaking of Google and speaking of the celebrity naming convention in the interactive world, Dr. Evans, has the internet changed the naming game, so to speak?
Oh, yeah. I think the fact that you can find what the most popular names are so easily on the internet is one of the factors that has led to the big drop in the percentage of kids who get the most popular names. 30 years ago, there was a lot of people who named their daughters Ashley, and then were really shocked to find out how many Ashleys there were when the kids got into school. And today, you don't have that excuse, because today, you know, you can go online immediately and find out that, you know, Isabella and Sophia and Ava are the popular names. And so if you want to avoid the popular names, you can do it so much easier than you could in the past. And a lot of that is the internet.
And how does one's name, you mentioned Ashley's, I can think of other names that are very common, Taylor and stuff like that in the younger generation. How does one's name affect one's image of oneself? How does your name affect your self-awareness? You go deep into it with onomastics and onomatology. How does a name affect your self-image?
Well, it becomes part of it. I think part of that depends on how your parents explain to you why they chose the name. I think that my first name comes from my maternal grandfather, and after knowing him and knowing what an admirable person he was, that sort of gives me something to live up to. I think that other people, I think if your name was chosen primarily, especially if you're a woman, by your parents just because it sounded pretty, you know, then what you're getting is the message that being pretty is the most important thing for a woman, if that's the only thing they can tell you about why they picked your name.
And how do people respond to other people's names based on your research, what you know about that, how people respond to names?
People respond very strongly to names, but the most of that comes in situations where the name sort of gets there ahead of you. There's a lot of research showing that people are much more likely to call in for job interviews, persons with names that they like or names that don't sound like they have a particular ethnicity. When you meet somebody in person, it usually turns out there's so many other things that you're learning about the person at the same time in terms of how they look, how they carry themselves, that the effect of the name by itself isn't really big in that situation. So the discrimination mostly comes in when you're like sending in a resume or something before they've met you in person.
The discrimination comes when you're sending in a resume.
Yes.
So if your name's Shaniqua, for instance, there's sort of a silent discrimination. They talked a little bit about that in Freakonomics,
yeah,
where they looked at the research and metrics around names and how they're perceived in the mainstream area. Have you done any studies like that, and what have you found?
What they found is precisely that people who have quote-unquote African-American-sounding names, and because of, you know, there's cultural differences, there are many names now which you hear and you know with 95% probability is probably a black person in the U.S., that those people are less likely to be called in for interviews. However, what's interesting is that if you actually keep education levels constant and look at actual incomes of African Americans, that there isn't that much difference between those who have the black identified and the non-black identified names. And so what I think that shows is that the same people who will not hire, you know, Shaniqua or Jamal when who are not called in Shaniqua or Jamal for an interview won't hire James and Angela when they show up for the interview and happen to be black either. So,
right.
You know.
Dr. Evans, let's talk about another sort of more gray area of naming, and that's nicknames. Of course, great nicknames, for instance, in sports, seem to be dissipating on the larger level of consciousness in terms of pop culture. You had Magic Johnson, Air Jordan, Papa Bear Bryant, Cool Papa Bell, for instance, Oil Can Boyd, Carl Mailman Malone, Iceman Gervin, Clyde the Glide Drexler, Goose Gossage, Dizzy Dean, Stan the Man Musial. I mean, these are cool names, but we're not getting that. What's the deal?
Well, I think a little bit of it is the fact that as the real names become more varied, in a sense, there's less perceived need for nicknames. You know, if you are less likely to have basketball players or football players or even baseball players with the same first name, then you don't need nicknames to differentiate them. And I think there may also be a little factor with some of the professional athletes is that people may feel a little less identified with them in terms of thinking that they're somebody you could just go out and have a beer with because of all the publicity about how much money they make. You know, they also contribute to being a bit more formal in how they're talked about.
So you're saying people may have felt like in another era they could have dinner or beer with Too Tall Jones or Clyde the Glide or, you know, Clyde Frazier or Broadway Joe Namath, but maybe not a LeBron James or maybe not Terrell Owens, T.O., or something like that. The more flamboyant guys of today.
Yes, I think that might be part of it, yeah.
Certainly. What's the different approach with a business name and how an individual brands himself as a business? Is that a different purview, or are we looking at the sort of same image consciousness?
Well, I think obviously it depends on what business, in a sense, you want to go in. Certainly the kinds of names which are considered appropriate for entertainers would be very different from the kinds of names that would be considered appropriate for bankers, for instance, who, like with everything else, just as in banking, people have much more conventional and staid clothing rules, they would have more conventional and staid naming rules, and people would be much more likely to want to give their kids names like, you know, William and Emily, which sound, as you say, less flamboyant, you know.
Our guest is Dr. Cleveland Evans, psychology professor and onomastics research. That's the study of naming and naming conventions. He's a researcher at Bellevue University, also a columnist for the Omaha World Herald, up in Nebraska. You're tuned in to Central Standard on KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall, the only man in the world with that name, for better or worse. Kansas City, did someone give you a unique name? How did you get it? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That's 816-235-2888. Shoot us an email at centralstandard@kcur.org as well. Facebook is also an option, and you can also hit us on Twitter. Catherine emails us to say, and ask you, Dr. Evans, does the creative trend in naming reflect the low-context culture we live in? What's the connection to ancestors and relatives? Does that have less and less meaning? I'm paraphrasing. She says, does it have little meaning in the form of a question? Low-context culture. That's a very good question. Thank you, Catherine, for that.
Well, I think there probably is less connection with the ancestors, but another part of that, ironically, is the family size getting smaller. I think people in past generations were more likely to use names from the family because, you know, we'll name the first child from the husband's side of the family, and then we'll name the second one from the wife's side of the family. If you're only thinking you're going to have one or two kids, you're less likely to use a name from either side of the family for fear of offending the other one. You know, so I think that's one of the things that's going on, is that people are more reluctant to name after a particular person when they're only going to have one or two kids to use the names with.
Well, we got some unique names calling in right now, and you can respond to their questions. Dr. Cleveland Evans, he's a psychology professor and onomastic researcher at Bellevue University, also a columnist for the Omaha World Herald. Lennister from Volcker, yeah. You're on Central Standard. What's up, Lennister?
Yeah, that's my first name, Lennister.
All right, Lennister.
And I'm an artist, so it worked out perfectly, so I signed my pennies with my first name, Lennister.
Lennister.
And it's a family name. My ancestors left Ireland just before this was a country, and there's a family cemetery in North Carolina. I walked around the corner, and there's my name on a tombstone. That'll shake your tree.
It'll shake your tree. Lennister's out here shaking trees. Thank you for your contribution to the conversation. Lennister, it's an artist, so it worked out perfectly. What do you think of that, Dr. Evans?
Well, I think it's great that it worked out good for him. That's an interesting name. It's obviously one of those things that was a last name in the family that became a first name. And he says North Carolina. Of course, that was more common in the South, especially for women until very recently, you know, to have family surnames turned into kids' first names.
We have Ken in Overland Park who makes the point that some people write off black or Hispanic sounding names when reading crime reports in the Star. That's the Kansas City Star. That's our local top shelf big paper here in our city. I'll give you another example. There was a guy out in Ohio who had the name Al Pacino Capone in his name, and, you know, it was no doubt that he ended up catching some murder raps. What happens when your name doesn't work out, Dr. Evans?
Oh, well, in the rare cases where your parents have named you something which is absolutely inappropriate, I think people should change it, you know.
Right.
I mean, I have seen on actual birth certificates parents who have named their kids things like Mayhem and Cobra, which I don't think anybody should ever
wow.
do. So, but that's sort of different than something which is just creative, but part of the population would have a prejudice against, like Chiniqua, which really shouldn't, you know, be getting the discrimination that it gets.
It shouldn't, but it does. Speaking of unique names, we have a gunner calling in from KC. I'm betting he doesn't play for Arsenal Soccer Club, but his name's Gunner. Welcome to Central Standard, Gunner. Let's shoot.
Hi, thank you for having me. Just really quick, my name is Gunnar Hauser Hand. I actually have my father's last name, my mother's maiden name. They named me after my grandfather who came from Germany, and his name was Gerhard. My mother wanted to keep the G, and my dad was hoping that I'd be a professional basketball player.
Right, like Pete Maravich, Pistol Pete Maravich. Were you a gunner on the court?
You know what? I'm actually 6'6 right now, so you can't teach height, and I do have a pretty good shot, but you know, mostly just play pickup ball right now. But
you're a passer. And not a gunner.
Yeah, something like that. I did get quite a bit of taunting when I was a little kid about guns and gunning, and I'm actually quite a peaceful person. But other than that, I had a quick question for the gentleman, and that is, you know, my wife and I are expecting in March, and if it is a boy, the closest thing that we had to a prenup is that it would be named. And the second
named what we lost your connection, Gunner. We named what the second?
Gunner Hauser Hand the second.
Gunner Hauser Hand two.
Is there a connection between, other than perhaps the vanity of the father, a connection between unique names and passing those along?
I haven't seen any research on whether the uniqueness is a factor, but I would tell you, you are doing the right thing by using second instead of junior, even though a lot of the etiquette books will tell you that you can't do that. You should do second, because one of the few things that tends to be negative is the word junior, which has a much more negative connotation than second, because you call somebody junior, it sounds like they're never going to really grow up.
Right.
And so second is actually much better for the child's personality than junior.
I'll pass that along to my wife.
Okay.
Thank you, Gunner.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Gunner Hauser Hand. We just heard from Gunner Hauser Hand. We're going to hear from Grayland in Pleasant Hill. Is it Grayland or Grayland?
It's Grayland.
All right, Grayland. Tell us about your name.
I don't know. My mother was a soap opera fan in the 50s, and supposedly that's where it come from. Never heard it before, never heard it since.
Okay, Grayland, you got a question for Dr. Cleveland Evans?
Has he ever heard it? I don't know where it come from.
Heard of the name Grayland, Dr. Evans?
Yes, I don't. I'm not sure what soap opera it's come from. It is very rare, you know. It's one of those things that probably, for babies being born now, probably a girl would be more likely to get it than a boy, but would have been male back when your caller was born.
To be honest, my name legally is spelled like a girl, Graylyn, Gray Lynn.
Mm-hmm.
But my mother picked the name, but when Dad seen it, she had already made out the birth certificate, and when Dad seen it, he said, "That's a girl's name. No way spelling it that way." So I actually spell it Graylyn.
Like Gray Lynn.
Graylyn.
Right, like land.
Grayland.
Grayland.
Yeah, without the D. So,
yeah,
legally it is spelled like a girl. So, anyway, I'm just curious. I've never heard it before or since. So,
Well, I'm just curious. Well, thank you for calling. I'll try to look it up.
Dr. Evans, how important is spelling?
Again, it's only important when people are seeing the name written. But I think a really difficult spelling does make life a bit more difficult for the child, and that people who know they aren't very good spellers in particular should run whatever spelling they're thinking of by other people to make sure that it does represent the pronunciation they think it does.
Chris M70KC writes on Twitter, "This website claims to tell you how many people share your name. HowManyOfMe.com. HowManyOfMe.com.
Yeah.
It claims to tell you how many of those people share your name. In the naming process, Dr. Evans, what ensures people remembering a name? How do people remember a name? What makes a name stick?
Being unusual helps, although I think that the combination of an unusual first name and a common last name, like I have, for some reason, seems to be particularly memorable to people. But I think anything that is easy to make an association with is going to be obviously easier to remember. And easier associations come when you can make a strong visual image of the name very, very easily. So ironically, people who have a name which is like a celebrity's are probably going to be easier to remember because you can get a strong visual image there.
Just real quickly, what are you working on now in the area of name studies? What's next for you, Dr. Cleveland Evans?
Oh, well, because I'm writing my newspaper column, I'm actually doing a lot more historical investigation than I used to, and finding out where exactly certain names came from or why certain names became popular in the past, which is fascinating to me. But before we had TV and radio, there were a lot of names that were popularized by novels. I was just writing on Clara, and there was this a couple of obscure novels written way back around 1800, which helped make that name popular, which nobody reads today, but everybody read back then.
All right. Dr. Cleveland Evans, psychology professor and onomastics researcher. That's the study of names. He's at Bellevue University, and he writes a column about the subject of names and naming conventions for the Omaha World Herald. Thank you very much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Tune in tomorrow when we'll ask, what does the debate among environmentalists about Deepwater Horizon oil spill have to do with the Renaissance period? Turns out, quite a bit. Very interesting stuff. We had help today from Tamika Weatherspoon. Our show is produced by Andrea Salenzi. Up to Date is next with a look at the causes and prevention of suicide. I'm Jabalani LaFault. This is Central Standard. Enjoy your day.